and welcome to Philosophy with Will Anderson. This is an episode that I recorded earlier in the year with Nazim Hussain. I love Nazim, really great guy. I'm sorry it's taking me so long to get this one up, but as people who are regular listeners to this podcast and to my other podcast, Tofop, know, I have had some problems over the last few months with getting all the podcasts up and losing a few episodes. So I'm pretty much up to date now. I think that all the episodes that I have recorded are up on the internet. There's a couple of new episodes of Philosophy up, one with Sarah Kendall. The brilliant Australian comedian Sarah Kendall that I recorded in the UK. I think you're really going to love that episode if you haven't checked that out yet. And one I recorded before that with a brilliant performance artist called Bryony Kimmings, who a lot of people may not be familiar with, but I always do recommend that if you haven't heard the name of the person I'm interviewing, still check out those episodes. In some ways, they're the most interesting episodes. I'm always trying to find people that I think are interesting to have on the podcast, and I think you'll find their stories interesting regardless of whether you're familiar with their work or not beforehand. In fact, you may not be familiar with Nazim, and if you are not, please check him out. If you can go and see him live, he's a brilliant live performer, but also you can check out a bunch of his stuff online, so make sure you do that as well. I'm going to be really quick on this one, but yes, there's a bunch of new Philosophy episodes up, if you can check those out. There's a bunch of new Fofop episodes up as well, including the 200th, the Fofengers episode is up now as well. So you can find all those at Tofop, TOFOP.com. If you've never listened to that podcast before, that'd be really cool. My special, of course, Illuminati, is still out and about. So if you're in a place where you can buy that, please buy that, because I'm hoping I can do a new one with Free Will, but we need enough people to buy Illuminati so that, you know, we can afford to do Free Will. Basically, that's all I want. I want enough people to buy this one so that I can, you know, film the next one and keep filming them in the future. So if you're in a place where you can buy Illuminati, please buy it. You can download it from iTunes or Google Play or on your PlayStation, I believe. But you can buy the DVD with the extra What You Talking About Will show in there as well. And if you're in a place in the world where you can't buy it, then steal it. That's okay. I'm fine with that. I would still like you to see the show. That'd be really cool. I have a bunch of gigs left on my Free Will tour. I have a few dates left in London at the Soho Theatre when you hear that. So if you want to come and check me out and you happen to be in London or somewhere near London, you can come and see Free Will at the Soho Theatre until Sunday the 14th or Sunday the 15th, whenever that is, and of June. And then after that, I will be taking the show July the 11th. It'll be at the Nerd Melt Theatre in Los Angeles. The 26th of July, I will be at the Montreal Just for Laughs Festival doing the entire hour. I'll be there all week doing shows, but doing the hour on the 26th, and it'd be brilliant if you could come along to that. Illuminati sold out last year, so it's the same venue. So if you want to come and see Free Will, the new show, maybe book early because it may sell out. That'd be really cool if it does. And then after that, I'm doing Sydney at the Enmore and then Perth at the PCEC, both of those shows with Justin Hamilton. And all the details of all those shows, including some gigs I'm doing in America, in Madison at Comedy on State, and a bunch of other shows, are all up on my website, willanderson.com.au, if you want to check out that stuff. If you like the podcast, share it around, rate it on iTunes or wherever you listen to it. That's the best way you can support it. And the other best way you can support it is, of course, by coming out and seeing my live shows. So thank you to Nazim, and thank you to all my guests, and thank you for listening to the podcast. Oh, I should mention, as I like to occasionally, thank you to St. Hughes, who are the people who came up with my theme music for the podcast, and they have a song called I Like You featuring Holly B, and that is out on iTunes. You can buy that and support those guys. I will often put it on at the end of the podcast, and if you like that song, please go out and, you know, support St. Hughes for letting me use their song for my theme song. All right, guys, I hope you enjoy this one with Nazim, and I'll talk to you again soon. Cheers. Welcome to Philosophy with Will Anderson. I am Will Anderson, and I'm going to get straight into it today because I've been banging on too much at the start. We're going to start with the traditional opening to the podcast. It's very simple. Our guest has not listened to the podcast, so this is good because it means you haven't prepared for this question. No, it's good. You can say shit as well. It's okay. It's fine. I put explicit on the podcast. Everything's fine. Guest, who are you?
My name is Nazim Hussain, and I'm here in your sauna / recording studio.
I like that. So that answer. The reason I always
paint a picture in people's minds.
No, but what I also like about asking that first question, and it doesn't have some, like, there's no trap to it or anything, okay, but I just like to hear how people define themselves.
Oh, really?
When someone says, who are you?
I place myself geographically.
Right. You were very much like, if I want to like start in a really kind of Buddhist, you know, spiritual sense on this podcast today, that says to me that you're a guy who's talking about being in the now.
Well,
you know, you didn't bring your past into it. Here's what I've done and who I am. And you didn't bring your future into it. You were like, this is who I am right now.
Physically, I am here. But though I'm not being very Buddhist, I could have said, hi, my name's Nazim Hussain and I'm here in your sauna / recording studio, though I am not present.
Oh, yeah, right.
But I'm present.
Yeah, I like that. This has started well already. So the second question that I ask on this podcast is, do you have a philosophy? Now, it's acceptable not to have one and it can be about anything.
I don't know. I probably do. I would probably work out that I probably do have philosophies about all sorts of things that definitely contradict each other, undermine the previous philosophy that I've just stated. So, look, we'll come to learn a little bit about how inconsistent I am.
Well, I like that as well, by the way. Yeah. Inconsistency in itself, I think, is a really positive thing for people to learn.
Is it?
Because I think, well, one of the things that I've loved about this podcast and one of the reasons I started it was that I wanted it to, my attitude from meeting successful people was, or interesting people or whatever people, was that all of them had very different stories and all of them had different priorities. And this message that we get in the mainstream media is that everybody who's in entertainment is like motivated by this thing.
Yeah.
And everybody who's in politics is motivated by this thing. Yeah. But the truth is that everybody's motivated by very different things. And I like here, and a lot of those things can be contradictory.
Well, absolutely. And you know, sometimes, oh, we'll get to that a bit later, but I'm often motivated by many different things. And someone could say something and it completely just changes or devalues that motivation. And all of a sudden I'm like, what an arrogant prick I am. Okay, which brings me to this one philosophy that I was thinking about when I was in the cab here and the guy was driving around your neighborhood lost, but I'm pretty sure he knew the way, but he just wanted to rack up a nice taxi fare.
Right. You're going to a nice neighborhood. They will take advantage of you.
I know.
I said that to you because I was out the back in my office doing some work and I like sent you a message and it said, look, I've left the front door open. Just wander through and if I'm not in the house, I'm out the back. And then I suddenly went, that is classic white person privilege.
I know. I was like, what kind of a safe neighborhood do you live in?
I probably don't live in a neighborhood that safe. I am probably being irresponsible.
Or it's the absolute opposite. You live in an absolutely trashy neighborhood that there is nothing to steal from your house. But I'm willing to presume that your listeners will know that that's not the case.
No.
There's a lot of nice stuff in Will's house. And if you can find his place, he leaves the door open. He's got lots of nice artwork. Anyway, so I was thinking about this on the taxi right here, and I was considering Googling philosophies.
Oh, nice.
But I didn't.
You were going to cheat.
You were just going to get, even know
you were
gonna
get someone else's
means.
Philosophy and use it as your own.
I know.
Like basically Russell Brand did in Revolution.
Did
that's
he?
What. Well, I just.
Oh,
I mean,
it's kind of Marxism, isn't it?
Well, it's just a whole bunch of. Right. If you've read Deep Rake Chopra and if you've read
if
any
you've
of.
Have you seen V for Vendetta?
Right. If you want someone to just mash them into. If you want a philosophy mashup, like in someone with tight pants and a groovy haircut and knows how to use words.
Will he be listening to this podcast?
Oh, I'd love if he is. I'd love him to come on. I'd love to talk to Russell.
He'd be amazing.
We have so much. Like, I mean, I have spoken to him before.
Yeah.
And the thing that, like, speaking of contradictions, right? Okay, here we go. Russell Brand's a good place to start.
Russell Brand has brought us to contradictions.
Most of the things that Russell Brand says in his book, Revolution, and most of the things that Russell Brand is talking about publicly at the moment, I 95% of them agree with wholeheartedly.
Okay. What is this?
It's just
one drop of poison in the jar of honey that you are referring to.
Well, Russell Brand is.
What do you mean? Oh, because he's a rich. Because he's a rich.
No,
dude.
I don't even think that. No, that's fine.
Okay.
I don't mind that. Like, I like the fact that it is a person in a position of privilege. Who is speaking up for those who are less privileged.
Great.
Right, rather than people who are in privilege reinforcing their own privilege, which is the prevailing message in our current day society. I think it's ridiculous, that argument, that only people within a group should speak for that group.
True.
Because people outside... People within a group can always be...
directing the conversation.
Right, and but also it can be accused from the outside of having special interests.
Yeah.
Whereas if everybody's like, well, I'm not gay, but I think gay people should be able to get married because I think gay people will have equal rights to me who was just born a certain way.
Yeah.
I should speak for those people who don't have the rights that I have, I think.
True.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree. So so get to Russell Brand being a contradiction.
Well, I just think the way that he presents the message that is a good message loses me.
The way he presents...
You know, his presentation... Well,
through his YouTube videos?
Yeah, through...
You hate YouTube?
I just hate... I just wish he would use less words and a few less syllables. And it could
it's
just
a British
be
British accent, isn't it?
It could be a little less about Russell Brand. You know what I mean?
Like, well, his surname is Brand.
I mean, it is a massive branding exercise. It is a wonderful branding exercise.
And he had a book to sell.
His brand is Brand. And oh, look, and again, all the profits of the book are going to like to charity or to
really?
Helping, you know, working class people or something.
That's
like
awesome.
I mean, he's not making profits from it. So again,
ooh,
I'm
man,
not.
Man, it's hard to fault this guy.
I mean, it is hard
it's
to fault this guy.
Freaking tricky.
But- right. Okay. And yet I still do, and that's,
no, but that's
a contradiction.
You're a comedian, you've got to find very different angles.
Okay, so what? Instead, okay. You didn't Google something, you
didn't
cheat.
Anything. I was thinking about this.
You came up with your own one,
I
like
frantically,
it.
I was speaking to my lady friend last night. Before.
Is that how you have to say it?
Lady
is that-
friend. In my head, there's just neon lights every time I think of her. Lady. So she, before I went to sleep, we were WhatsApping each other, and she goes, what are you doing tomorrow? I said, oh, you know, just Will Anderson's podcast in the morning. And she goes, oh, cool. What are you going to talk about? I said, oh, just, you know, just philosophy, you know, just the stuff that I'm normally pretty good at talking about. And I said, hey, what's your philosophy in life? And she said, are you literally just cramming? So I went to sleep, so she said, good night. She went to sleep. Then I started thinking about this morning in the cab.
Yeah.
A while back, before Christmas, we went to her. She's now studying teaching. She's doing a placement at a school. We went to her Christmas party with her teachers. And we ended up sitting next to the principal's wife, who is this really nice lady. But she freaks out about flying on planes. Like she's terrified, she's petrified, she hasn't traveled in like 30 years, and she loves her husband, she wants to travel with him, and he loves traveling, so it's kind of this friction in their relationship. Well, you know, they've resolved it in some way. And she said, but then we were talking to her, we're like, what is it about? And she said, I just don't know, I just have this fear that the plane is going to crash, and you know, I know it's an irrational fear, but I just, it's just a control thing that I have, and I actually just can't get over it. And we spoke about it for a while, and then she ended up concluding herself that she said, you know what? I don't actually know anything about how planes are flown. I don't know anything about the safety precautions that they take. So really, I'm in no position to actually be a control freak. I am not allowed to therefore be a control freak because I'm ignorant.
Right. I'm not an expert.
I'm not an expert. So her rule is you cannot be a control freak or have or really say anything unless you know what you're talking about. And that kind of, in a way, resonates with me because...
Right. Well, maybe not even you can't say anything,
yeah.
But you can't claim to have an absolute expertise.
You can't claim to have an absolute expertise, or even personally, though. You
right.
You can't have an anxiety, or you can't actually have a hang-up over something that you don't know everything about, which I guess at the center of that is the idea of being, or is humility, and also... I guess the pursuit of knowledge. So it's
right.
Those kind of two things that I think that I respect those two.
I like it. This is good. I think this is a really great area.
Yes!
Because firstly, it has a lot of ramifications for our
awesome
current day. It has a lot of... You can claim that now. It has a lot of ramifications for a debate in our modern day society. Okay. I think you've tapped into something that the reason that people aren't vaccinating their children, the reason that we're not having a decent climate change policy worldwide is because people... claiming expertise in areas that they are not experts
in. They have no idea about.
Right.
But
like,
then,
you know, I don't know if there is... Well, I know that there's climate change. I think most people admit there's actual climate change. I don't know if man-made factors are affecting that climate change. Here's what I do know.
Right.
That an overwhelming majority of the people who are experts in that area believe that it's true.
Yep.
And our society operates on this. Like, we can't operate and we can't evolve as a society if we don't trust the experts to be experts.
I agree.
You can question expertise, and we always should. It should be rigorous, right? But you can't get on a plane, like, to use that example, unless, like, we get on a plane instinctively because we trust that everybody's done their job. We don't investigate it. The reason that the pilot comes on at the start and says, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to 30,000 feet, we're going to the east, is not because we need that information.
To sell his expertise, isn't it?
It's to tell us, hey, read your magazine.
I'm
someone up here has thought this through.
I have a calm voice. You shut the fuck up.
Right.
And trust me.
Right.
Which I totally respect. And you think about it, we're both comedians and we are inherently, and we're taught and we're trained and we are supposed to critique assumptions and always just be a little bit skeptical.
Sure.
And, you know, and that's a healthy thing to have. But if you were actually like that all the time, you would be properly anxious. And I don't think, I was reading something about sociology, okay, and about social philosophy, and it says that there is a thing called a social fact, or just things that are common across all people. It doesn't matter, irrespective of race, religion, ideology, and that is the inherent idea that we need to trust each other.
Okay,
yeah. If we didn't trust each other, we'd actually just break down. Like if you said, the train comes at 3:30 and we just didn't trust that idea, we would, you know, question the guy at the box. We would, you know, come 3 hours early, like our whole life would be in
crazy. It's why things like terrorism are so powerful.
Yeah.
It's why, like, the Sydney siege, where two people died, very sadly, or three people died, I think, including the guy.
Yeah.
But two people died very sadly in that situation. Mm. There are two people dying of domestic violence a week in Australia. Uh-huh. But the reason the Sydney siege means that thousands of people lay flowers in there and it affects us is they were doing something that we all do every day and that we wouldn't leave our house without this trust that you can go and buy a coffee without there being a mad, like, you know what I mean?
Correct, yeah.
Like, that's, we rely on this as a society.
Yeah.
This idea that we're competing against each other is what's holding us back in a lot of ways, because the only way that we achieve what we want in our lives is to work together with other people.
Well, I agree with you. I think, you know, that guy, Man Monis, really wanted to inspire division and hatred and sort of cut at and take a stab at that idea of trust amongst absolute strangers. And that's what he did. That's what he tried to do. But what actually happened was that we were, as Australians, were inspired to actually come together. That idea of trust wasn't shaken, shook. We were all, you know, the hashtag I'll ride with you trended. Ordinary Australians were inspired to reach out and love each other more than hate each other, which I thought was just like, you have that fear that people are just going to immediately snap and that we're so close to this sort of civil war or just turning on each other. But I think that's actually takes a lot more effort and it's unnatural for people.
Also that most people, like, again, in the way that most Muslims are moderate, most people aren't going to react, like, people don't think that, all Muslims are like that either.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was an opportunity. I found it so weird. Mm. People don't have to get involved in something like that.
Yeah.
I didn't even, like, tweet about it because I was overseas at the time and I was actually coming back. Like, I flew as the siege started and landed, it was over. So it was a crazy time to be in the air. Yeah. But it was one of those things where when all the columnists came out and started shitting on I'll Ride With You, I was like, that was just people trying to say to other human beings, hey, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Now, maybe, like, I mean, I've read commentary, from the, like, Muslim writers who are like, well, I don't need this. This is patronizing. I'm fine with all these ideas being out there.
Yeah.
But I'm also fine, and I'm fine with people going, I don't need it.
Yeah.
But I'd rather just start with the position of us saying, if you need me, I'm here.
Yep.
In general, in society. Like, you know, if someone's going to punch someone else in the back of their head at a pub, that, you know, you step in, you say it's okay. Yeah. If some, you know, like, a girl should be able to walk the streets by herself, but if you see someone in a dangerous situation, maybe just step in, because we're all in this together.
Well, my sister, my younger sister, she works at a law firm in Melbourne, and she, on the day the siege started, she actually texted me and she said, Nazeem, I'm scared to go home now. She wears a headscarf.
Yep.
And she said, I'm scared. I think someone, you know, I feel the same level of anxiety that I did immediately after 9/11. I said, just take off the hijab. You don't need to wear it. Like, it's not, you know, it's if you're not feeling safe, don't wear it. So she took it off and she went home on the train and she got home. And then that hashtag started trending and she started reading the news articles about ordinary Australians saying, if you're traveling from here to here, I'll ride with you. You know, if anybody feels unsafe, I'm happy to walk with you. And she, you know, she was brought to tears and it kind of made me feel, even thinking about it makes me feel emotional. So then she then felt inspired and strong enough to the next day wake up and put on her hijab again and catch the train, because she trusted just random members of the public, knowing that even though it's just a hashtag, it comes from a place of wanting to do good, whether or not people are actually able to then stand up and say something or do anything. That's a different story. That's
right. But also the thing that I would say about it is that I think, and we were just having a chat about this on the lawn before we started, but
on your expensive lawn,
we've got the extremists, like, you know, who are using religion, as the source of their, like, they're murderers who want to murder, and they've chosen religion to be the, you know, the justification for murdering people. Right.
Correct.
And we with this idea that by demonizing that community more and making them feel more apart, that that will somehow make that better. That's going to make that worse. If you're taking disenfranchised people and disenfranchising them further. So even the thing that I liked about that was, because it's not often that you get to say out loud, hey, by the way, we don't get to mention this all the time, but we're glad you're here and we'd love you to be part of this country and maybe we could all do it together. Again, we've got to do it together. The thing that I always say about the people who are like, if you don't love it here, leave. Yeah. I want people to love it here. Yeah. But why don't we make them love it here by going, hey, you know how this is like country's really fucking awesome?
Yeah.
Like our way, like... some of our ways might be, you know, ways that you will also enjoy.
Sure, yeah.
Like, you don't have to accept all of them.
Yeah.
Like, but there might be some of our way of life that the reason that you actually came here in the first place is because
of those
you'd heard about that way of life.
Well, I totally agree with you. Like, that's, I mean, in obviously radicalization, extremism, there are a myriad of reasons why people become that. But I think one of the primary reasons is because Australians feel like they are on the margins, and then they have a prime minister that comes out and makes them feel like they are even more on the margins, and that their behaviour isn't in accordance with what it means to be Australian, and that they are therefore out of the conversation. Their Muslim leaders are forced to condemn, and then everybody sort of says, you're not part of us. So they have to congregate on the borders of society, and, you know, they form another identity. But if there is a way that you could somehow involve them in the broader narrative and have them under our umbrella somehow and say, look, you know, radical politics is very much an Australian idea. We are critical of the West's intervention in many ways as well. There are segments of Australian society that share the same political views, religiously maybe not. So, like, it's and that's kind of what it is as well. We were just talking before about expert ideas, right? And what it means that you can only be a control freak, or you can only really say something unless you know what you're talking about. But these guys as well, like radicals and extremists and of any religion or whatever, they believe in many ways that they are being guided and informed by expert opinions as well.
Right.
Which is the scary part, but it's also an interesting thing, because you see Osama bin Laden, right? Like, people are inspired by what he says because he comes across like a learned man.
Just for the record, I'd like to say a big hello to everyone at ASIO who's now tuned into the podcast.
We've got a few more listeners.
We've just got a few more of the keywords out there early in the podcast this week.
Their usernames are all John Smith.
Yeah, drones, mosque.
But it's not a bit lying. Like, he, like, for lots of Muslims who are, you know, fighting the cause overseas in Syria, I don't like to call, I mean, you can call them Muslims loosely because I don't think they clearly follow the tenets of the faith. But they, you know, they would think that he's an expert. He knows what he's talking about.
Right.
But, you know, similarly, there are other scholars who are present themselves as experts, just like with climate change, which is, you know, say someone like Tony Abbott, he doesn't necessarily agree with the conversation that most progressive Australians have about climate change, because he would say, oh, there are other scientists that say that it doesn't exist. So at the end of the day, it's kind of a buyer's market.
Right. But so
consensus?
I guess here's what I would say to this is, I think as a basic tenet of humanity, that we have to survive, say that firstly, that human life is sacred as much as it possibly can be.
True. So that does need to be that underlying agreement that everybody agrees that human life is the most important thing.
Right. So I think that's a starting position for everything. Like, you know, because I've always been a big proponent of the right to swing your fist stops at another person's face. You know, you can believe whatever the fuck you want to believe. Yeah. The minute it starts hurting somebody else, then we'll have a conversation about it, right?
Yeah.
Now, then you say, well, wars have been fought over ideology. Uh-huh. You might mention, say, Nelson Mandela, a man who wanted to go the peaceful way but thought that the injustice that he was fighting eventually was so bad that they had to become violent and pick up arms. So I'm not saying there's necessarily blacks and whites in all of these occasions. Yeah. I would draw the line very much.
There often are, though, and whites tend to be wrong.
Yeah. Come on, surely that's brown and whites. So the thing that I would say is that the minute we're killing innocent civilians, that's not a game that any of us should be playing. Mm. We can have a broader debate about the nature of war.
True.
And I think on both sides, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, I think we have to have much higher standards for our ideas of, like, when we're at war with countries or bombing countries, the standards that we hold ourselves to for civilian deaths. I think every side, because clearly if you're killing civilians in one country, again, that's kindling on the fucking fire of the people who...
I totally agree. And this is going to make me sound like I'm an Al-Qaeda sympathist, but I'm not. But
hello to everyone at the NSA who's now listening as well. This is really...
I've got a few more listeners in Afghanistan and Iraq. G'day, my ISIS mates. I'm joking.
I'm just going to edit out, but I'm not. And ruin your career.
But those guys, right? Again, I absolutely despise that brand of ideology. But Osama bin Laden, the way he inspires people to join his cause, or he did, and the same as the ISIS guys now, is they say, look at the way that the West has invaded our land
right.
and killed indiscriminately hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians in Iraq. You know, we can't passively resist. This is, again, in the way that Nelson Mandela took up arms defensively, this is kind of their ideology. So it's sort of like, you know, I disagree with what they're doing, you can understand how we got to this place.
Well, you can understand
to this place.
You can understand how, if you want to use this, like the metaphor of the mystery box on MasterChef, that out of the ingredients they've provided with, they've been able to cook that cake and people have wanted to eat it.
That's right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there is enough things that have happened that you can tell that narrative.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, you can lie a bit because, you know, here's the thing. In the West, we would never believe a lie that made us go to a war, apart from the weapons of mass destruction. Like, I mean, if we're believing that shit, then of course, you know, the other side have got their shit that they're being told that may not be true that they're using to justify.
Exactly.
So I think across the world, we have to have a higher standard for what we'll kill someone for a start.
Yep. I think that's it. If you are going to kill someone, you need to be across every argument, every idea. You need to put yourself in every person's shoe because... That's I think, you know, any other decision. If you're going to go buy a toaster, you can listen to one person's opinion and go, all right, fine.
And if it's a battle, if it becomes like a war, an ideological war, then, you know, and I guess that's what these people think. But as a, you know what, I'm not a religious person. Uh-huh. I don't believe in it. Mm. I perhaps, you know, feel like that there is some...
maybe agnostic.
Maybe, yeah. Like some life force.
Maybe agnostic.
Yeah, but like a bit of, but there might be some life force, or that might just be the universe, or it might be a natural evolution. But I do feel some connection, and there are certainly things that I can't explain scientifically, but that I'm also probably smart enough to understand that I can't explain them scientifically. Yeah. But at some stage in our evolution, probably somebody will be able to say, oh, that's why we loved, or that's why we, you know, felt like this, or that's why we had a connection to this, or what. They'll all be things that people will be able to
become known,
you know, explain to us.
Yeah.
But maybe also, you know, that idea of there being, I've done psychedelic drugs and stuff where I've had experiences where I felt like, oh no, there's much more of a real connection or an energy connection and those sort of things. Now that might just be how drugs affect, you know, your brain as well.
Yeah.
I don't have a firm sense on any of those things. Mm-hmm. I respect anyone's right to believe whatever they want to believe. But the minute you start killing an innocent person in the name of your imaginary thing, exactly. I start calling them an imaginary thing.
Up until
that point, I'm fine.
The thing is, I think
you can go to a house and like pray to your imaginary thing and have fun, and I will respect that.
Yeah.
And I won't call it an imaginary thing. But the minute you start fucking bombing people and killing innocent people, I'm like, oh, by the way, you can't do that about imaginary thing.
Well, I don't think any imaginary thing would be happy that that happens.
Right.
In the name of the imaginary thing.
Yeah, and you've imagined a bad thing. If you think your imaginary thing.
Double imagination. Then.
You're imagining a thing already. Imagine a good thing. Why are you imagining this terrible thing? I hate you mostly for your lack of imagination.
Or that you have too much of an imagination.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Now, tell me this. Yeah. Tell me what your, like, religion, where you're at with your religion and, you know, how you were raised and how important it is in your life. And tell me that story.
I've been raised Muslim my whole life and born and raised Muslim. I think
From Sri Lanka?
From Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
Lived in Melbourne. My parents split when I was like six, so I was mainly raised by my mum.
Uh-huh.
And she, you know, she was a religious person, kind of in a very, this sounds insulting, but I mean, in a quite a ritual sort of way. Like, she's a sort of simple person. She just wants to look after her kids, and she just did the things that, you know, she saw her parents do and teach her.
Yeah.
I guess when I started going to Saturday school and Sunday school ever since I can remember, when I was about mid-teens, late teens, I did really start to question my own faith and what it all means, you know, because you're sort of taught from people who are, again, taught from their parents and their parents and their parents and their parents. And when you ask certain questions, I think They stress out that your faith is being shaken, or that you have uncertainty.
Right, because they also probably at some stage ask those questions and knows that there is no decent answer. So they're like, please don't ask that one.
Or they themselves actually don't really know the answer. Or they think that, like, it's actually a bad thing to not know, and that faith means to have absolute certainty right. at all times. But I don't... So that kind of led me to explore all sorts of... I explore all sorts of different faiths: Christianity, Judaism, Buddhism, agnosticism, you know, like just every all sorts of theologies.
I have not read enough of all those things, or like explored enough of all those things to have my own opinion on it.
Yeah,
but I imagine there is like some tenets.
Yeah.
And if I had to guess, it would be like, yeah, the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But I imagine there are certain tenets that are pretty much universal to all of those things, do you think?
I'm by no means a theologian. No. But definitely, like what you said before, like sanctity of human life, I think all religions preach. And I think, you know, the ones that have stood the test of time and are still selling, like... It's about life. You're protecting each other, loving each other. And
well, it's a bad consumer model to kill your customers. Do you know what I mean? Like,
if it's going to be a buyer's market, you need to have some buyers.
Right. I mean, no one would buy the iPhone 7 if you only had it for 6 weeks and then you died.
By the way, it doesn't call. It doesn't make phone calls.
Oh, actually, some people would buy it. Some people would line up for it.
Just for
Apple diehards. Literal Apple diehards.
Yeah, just don't bag Apple. You're going to lose a lot of
followers. I know. This one might go up on iTunes mysteriously. The only people listening are at the NSA and ASIO. iTunes sent them a version.
Shit, I might get fast-tracked into the States next time. I did get detained for 4 hours. That's another story. But yeah, so I guess that kind of whole phase of my life did lead me back to Islam. And maybe that's because when you grow up with something that's maybe, I don't know, I think there's something that maybe it becomes part of your DNA. That's maybe where your psychology by default is what you are when you are in your formative years.
Right. I'm not going to put words in your mouth because I'm sure you have a very different, more personal experience to it.
Yeah.
But from an outsider's point of view, like I would put forward the idea that that has a nicer message to it, which is this, that most of those things are probably like everyone's looking for the same thing from them.
Yeah.
But culturally you grow up with one and that one feels more comfortable to you because, you know, and I think that just the only reason I say that is not about you, because your experience would have been very personal to yourself and I'd like to hear about it.
Yeah.
But I mean more in a sense of why are we going, like, why is someone, I always find it weird that the really religious person in America, like the Christian person, is like has a problem with the really religious, like Muslim person. When I'm like, no, you guys have heaps in common.
Exactly. Well,
you both like believe in this thing that isn't true. I've got to stop saying that. That may be true. That may be...
By the end of this, I may convert
you. No, if there is a thing that is true, then surely all those things are us in our tiny human minds trying to interpret this higher God force or whatever.
The one thing that maybe is true amongst all religions and ideologies is that pursuit. I think that's what it is, actually. Probably, you know, obviously, religions sell sanctity of life, but I think, for me, Islam is about that pursuit of truth. More so than it is about anything that is certain.
Okay, interesting. You know, I like that.
So, like, I think, you know, the Quran is there. I was talking to Waleed Ali. I'm name dropping.
Sure.
This is the other day. And we were talking a little bit about Ali, who was the fourth leader after the Prophet Muhammad died.
Okay.
And there was a dispute as to someone was assassinated, and there was a dispute as to what they should do with this person. Should they kill him? Should they this or that and the other? And someone said, no, it's clear what's in the Quran. That's what God intended. And then Ali picked up the Quran and said, oh, so that's what the Quran meant. Is that what God meant? And then he said, here's a Quran, let it talk. And then everyone was like, what do you make of it? Like, what, that's so stupid. But that's, his point was that religion is like, or Islam or religion is that pursuit. It's that pursuit of reason. It's a pursuit of thought. Like, it's really about trying to find that truth. And it's all about interpretation and making sense of your surroundings. Everything is culturally relevant. Without that cultural relevance, nothing makes sense. So that's kind of, for me, what Islam has become. Like, it is about approaching truth.
It's good. This is fascinating.
So there is really, like, you know, as much as some people say this is what Islam says, there is, it is clear that you can arrive at certain conclusions based on source text, but at the same time, everything, absolutely everything, is an interpretation of God's will. Nothing is clearly God's will in Islam. And once I understood that, I felt a lot freer following Islam, knowing that, you know, just because some guy says something doesn't necessarily mean that that is what it is. There are a myriad of interpretations, and there are as many paths to that truth as there are aspirants or people that are trying to find that truth. So yeah, that felt for me like I could go, you know, I could critique, I could question things that didn't make sense to me. And yeah, so I'm evolving as a Muslim day in, day out. And I'm also finding doubt and certainty in, along the way.
It's really interesting to me. Tell me, what do you think happens when we die?
Oh, God! Why is this important? Can I ask why that's important?
I just like to ask people what they think.
But can I ask why that's important?
Well, because here's the thing. I don't like to be closed-minded. I even feel bad before that I was joking about, like, imaginary things.
Because I
don't know. Like, I've spoken about this publicly, is that, like, you talk about your idea of expertise.
Yeah.
This is something that I clearly can't ever know what the answer to it is until I die, right?
Similarly, but why is that question important, though?
I like to hear what people think.
Yeah, but...
Yeah. I like to know if people are interested in it. I like to know if it motivates you.
As a human, why is that important? Like, I'm not criticizing you. I just want to know why it is that...
Well, here's what I would say. Important. It's not important to me.
Well, it's not important
Because I live my life like when I die, what I assume happens is I will be dead and that will be it.
True.
So that's really my genuine... Okay. Like, point of view. I'm not haunted by it or terrified by it, or I just have a real sense of, like, you know, I'll live until I die, and then when I'm dead, it won't matter either way because I'll be dead.
But, and you're guided by morals that, I don't know, you are guided by your own, like, you're guided by, like, a worldview that you believe is principled.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, like, I definitely have, like, a whole, and which is an interesting area when it comes to things like, you know, religion, because sometimes you'll have people like, well, if you don't have religion, how do you have, like, morals? And I say, well, I have empathy.
Yeah, I think...
I try to live as a human being and, like, understand other people's struggles and how, like, and not be just completely self-involved.
Okay, well, I'll tell you something before I get to your answer. Like, okay, this is another thing that Islam says, but also a lot of other faith, and this is kind of a universal idea, but Islam also says it. It says that if you were to live, say, on a hypothetical desert island, and there was no person there that could teach you about religion or this and that and the other, Islam dictates that you will naturally have an inclination towards accepting that there's a creator, right? So that's a basic tenet of the faith, that there is a God, right? If you ponder, that's what Islam says.
Sure.
Secondly, that you will come to... understand morals and ethics and principles anyway, and that is by listening to yourself. By finding yourself, you find God. And so they say there's a thing called a sheikh, which is like an imam or a priest. And they say if you don't have a sheikh, if you don't have someone that like someone that can guide you spiritually, listen to yourself, because that is that kind of your natural, what do you call it, your
right
gut feeling.
Yeah,
what you think is right is probably right, which is problematic when you're mental,
right? Right, that is the problem.
But that's
because when you think that God's talking to you and telling you terrible things, you're suddenly like, hang on.
But this is when you are completely, you have your own ideas by yourself on an island. But, you know, so, you know, I don't really know what that says. It sort of says it like, you know.
See, I would hope, I was on an island by myself, I would really hope there is no God, because I would be doing a lot of masturbating, like heaps. So I'd be terrified that God was watching.
Just not watching it, or just like, bro, I've seen it all.
It's like
I created that.
It's like God looks down. He's like, that is a Caribbean island. There shouldn't be snow on those. Oh, that's not snow. This is terrible.
That's Will Island.
Oh, I looked at what I created and I was repulsed.
Will Slopes. But look, I do think when you die, well, I don't. I think when you die, that you meet your creator, and that you are, I don't really know. Well, this is where you are held to account. You're held to account for what you have done, good and bad. So
okay, so that's an interesting thing.
Because
I will tell you this. I had an experience when I was doing the drug DMT. Have you ever heard of that drug?
I've never heard
of it. It's like ayahuasca. It's a thing that people do for the purpose of, like, ayahuasca is a Peruvian thing, and people call it the work, and they go into these, like, psychedelic states, and some people believe that we're communicating with other dimensions. Other people believe that it's a connection with the spirits that are through the plants and things like that. Okay. Other people believe believe it's just, you know, it's drugs in your brain and whatever. But people have very spiritual, you know, so often people feel like they experience their own death, what it feels like to die.
Is what they do in Brazil, right? In the jungles of Brazil?
Yeah, they do all, yeah. So it's all that same vibe, right? Yeah. So I, one time I did it and, I experienced what felt like me experiencing my own death.
Oh,
and when you say you meet your creator, right?
Yeah.
I had an experience with that where here's what it felt like. It felt like I could feel like I was, you know, imagine a globe spinning, like the earth is spinning really, really, really quickly and you feel like you're part of it.
Yeah.
And then you feel like it slowed down and then I just eased out of it and like my energy came out of being on like the planet and kind of just like was in like the universe, like floated out and then I was just like done. And it did feel like I was meeting some, like, but not in any sort of like, all right, now I have a list of good and bad things you've done.
All right, number one, masturbation.
That time on that island. This is.
Let's talk about chapter Will's Island.
Yeah, to be honest with you, that's number 1 through 98 on our list. Is your time on that island? We'd never seen someone fuck a coconut before.
A box of Kleenex a day. Come on,
right?
Trees.
I invented tissues and bowling.
So you came out of that. Did that change permanently your perspective on anything?
No, not really. Because, I mean, look, you know, I'm very open-minded in that if we discovered, like, tomorrow, you know, that there is a God and his name's Larry and he lives here and, like, everyone's like, well, that's... I'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
Hey, Larry. I feel like I try to live a good life regardless because...
Well, and to be honest, like, I don't know... I'm sure there are, like... It makes you a different person if you believe or if it doesn't in some way. Maybe it does instruct your behavior in some way.
Right.
But I think at the end of the day, if you're a good person, you're a good person. And I don't know if it really matters. Like, if you are genuine in your pursuit and you don't find God, well, then what does it matter to me if I believe and you don't? Like, it doesn't matter. You're doing your thing, I'm doing mine.
Right.
But it becomes, like you said, what was that rule that you said before?
The right punch, to swing your fist stops at another person's face.
That's it. Like when that happens, then we should have a chat.
Right. All right. I want to talk about, you said you were at a teacher's, you know what? Let's just have a quick pause.
Okay, cool.
You said we had a little break and we talked about a lot of interesting things, but we had to keep stopping conversations because we thought they'd be good things for the podcast.
Yeah, we've got a glass of water.
One of the things that you said, which I really wanted to go back to, is the idea about us having a conversation.
Yeah.
Like we don't get a lot of opportunity to have a conversation with someone who is religious and does believe, and someone who...
Well, similarly for a Muslim, for a religious person, I guess, to speak to... I think it's the idea that a religious person and an atheist or an irreligious person just can't get on.
Right.
Can't have a conversation anyway. And for it to be a normal, happy, funny conversation.
But that's also such a weird thing when it comes to this idea that, like, you have to have everything in common with people that you like.
Yeah.
Like, most of the people I really like, I have, like, heaps of things not in common with. Like, Amy, like, believes in ghosts. Like, believes in them. And I'm like the. Yeah.
But you know what? I'm not going to laugh at that because I've seen scary movies and then I think
But also, she thinks it's stupid that I don't believe in ghosts. Like, she's like, of course ghosts are real. And I'm like, they're not fucking real. And she mocks me all the time. It's like she'll be watching some ghost thing and she's like, well, apparently this isn't real, is it?
But imagine if you just hang out with people who believed exactly the same things that you did.
I think that that's a mistake in our society that people do that. Mm. And also a mistake that we make with new communities where they become ghettos because we don't ask them. We don't ask them to assimilate, or we put them in an area and then they're around the same ideas and the same people.
Kind of, well, a lot of people say, oh, you know, those ethnic ghettos, those enclaves, they just don't assimilate with everyday Australians. But then you think about it, there are lots of white enclaves. It's called, like, the rest of Australia. If you go to...
Mate, it's called this suburb.
It's called this suburb. But I love this enclave.
Mate, like, seriously, there would have been, like, you know, there would have been, like, 20 people, like, on your cab ride who called their security just because you've come into this area, mate.
Me and the cab driver, we were just wide-eyed, mouth open. Wow, steal their bins.
Yeah. Why do they have so many bins?
No,
they all have like 4 bins.
They actually separate from, you know, you guys do the recycling thing properly. That's one thing ethnic people don't do. We do not separate. Sorry about that. I'm just outed everybody.
Ironically, Right. Oh, you won't separate your recyclings, but you stay in your own areas and society.
Hey, eat our own food. Speak our own accents, but
that is this. Yeah, I think that we increasingly these days live in echo chambers.
Mm-hmm. Echo chambers, I like.
Right, you know, this idea of like, you know, that you're preaching to the choir, that you're just reinforcing the ideas that people already have. Mm. What are the best things that you get out of your religion? Like, what are the things that you go, this is why, other than believing, like, you know, which is in itself something.
Yeah.
Because I do think that we need to believe in things.
Yeah.
I don't want people to get the idea that I don't believe in things. Like, I believe that the Western Bulldogs will still win a premiership in my lifetime, even though they haven't been in a grand final since 1961.
Cute. That's an imaginary idea.
I have faith in imaginary ideas, you know? Well, and I'd be rapt if it did actually happen.
Well, look, one of the things, I believe in a God that says you should do good, and if you do good, you are fulfilling the purpose of your life.
Right.
So when I do good and
which is a nice idea regardless.
Which is a nice idea, right?
Right.
And I know, like, people who disagree with God vehemently, but...
some people do. I think that we have a responsibility. This, again, was another thing we were talking about off air. The ardent atheist.
Ardent atheist.
Sometimes I understand the ardent atheist. If you were a person who was involved in a religion and there was something terrible that happened in that, and then later in life you have this discovery, maybe you go the other way. Uh-huh. But if you're not, and you're an ardent atheist anyway...
Or an anti-theist.
Then I fucking hate you. Seriously.
Look, it's not even...
Spend your time on something productive. I don't believe in the fucking tooth fairy, but I haven't started a fucking blog about the tooth fairy, and I don't tweet about the tooth fairy every day, and I don't look up fucking messages about the tooth fairy on Twitter and then go, oh, your tooth fairy isn't real. Do something productive with your fucking life. Do you want to come to my atheist meeting? No. The reason I didn't want to be religious is they have fucking meetings all the time.
Sunday morning.
Like, now we're having a meeting about something we don't believe in. At least the people who are having the Sunday meetings believe in something. They're having a meeting celebrating their belief. We're having a meeting celebrating the fact we don't believe in something.
These are the things we do not believe in this week. No, but like now, modern atheism is anti-theism, which is like the affirmative belief in not something. But it's not even that. I don't have a problem with that belief system. It's more a cool modern attitude that certain people who are against... religious communities or people in communities who do bad shit, like, it's that. It's like people are like, oh, Christianity's so blah, and it's just this cool idea to make fun of Christianity because certain Christians do some pretty terrible things. But you're not going to tarnish the whole religion because the KKK did some things or because some priests molested some boys. Like, yeah, you can... But I don't think if you're a religious person...
Well, right? I think we should rule that line in general. Right. And again, this was a conversation we had off air. But, like, let's just rule the line at the start.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
I understand that perhaps if we can evolve to a world where we don't have religion, or that we all kind of like have a humanist religion, or that we represent God in a unified world, I'm not sure what any of those things would be. But maybe that would be a better world to operate in, where people didn't disagree so vehemently about these like basic tenets, right? But it's not happening in our lifetime. Uh-huh. So how do we get better along and evolve? Like, firstly, let's just rule out bad behavior and take the religion out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop killing innocent people. Stop fucking kids. It doesn't matter if you're in entertainment like Rolf Harris or if you're in the fucking Catholic Church.
Yeah.
Let's just say we have a no fucking kids policy. Right?
That's a good policy.
Yeah, that's a policy just across the board.
And the thing is, like, if you...
Religious or not religious, don't fuck a kid.
If you're an atheist, don't fuck a kid.
Right.
If you're a Muslim, don't fuck... Like, I think also, like, if you're actually so passionately anti-religion, I don't think you're ever actually going to convince a person who believes out of their faith because... you make fun of their faith in that way. Like, that's not going to inspire someone to go, you know what, that angry tweet about Jesus has really gotten to me.
That turned me around.
Yeah, turned me around. When was the last time?
I'd never really thought about it that way.
But have you ever, like, been convinced of something because you've argued with someone? Like, have you ever taken their side or genuinely gone, because someone's really angrily argued with you? I've never actually...
No, I mean, it's the opposite. Anytime you have a debate that isn't actually a debate, it's just like a left wing and a right wing.
It's just people just arguing with each other.
It's just people reinforcing their own positions.
Speaking to your own own audience or right. like in your own echo chamber.
Right. And this is why it's so stupid when for the idea of balance, for example, on a climate change debate,
yeah.
they will have a climate change like scientist
yeah.
and then they'll have a climate change denier
yeah.
who are two people at the opposite ends.
Yeah.
And one of them also is not an expert in any way.
Yeah.
If you want to get a balance on, get like a climate change expert and maybe someone who's a climate change expert, but also like has some doubts about, you know, yeah. some models or whatever. But that's actually a debate you could have and we could learn something from it. True. And we could get a better position, you know.
But the aims of that kind of binary thing is just to present completely different perspectives. It's not there's no end goal to say we will reach something.
Right.
It's kind of like, look, and not, I'm not, this is not to say that.
Well, because then they can't do it again next Thursday.
Exactly.
Do you mean? Like,
tune in next Thursday.
They can't tune in on the third week of Sunrise straight after the cash cow and they get like a Palestinian and an Israeli and they fucking shake hands and high five and work it out at the end. That's not.
Well, on that, like, this is not to say that I'm against the idea of speaking to your own and empowering your own. Like, every.
No, that's good as well.
Exactly. Well, every kind of like social change in history has happened because like a small bunch of people empowered themselves, got angry together, and then they affected change. Like from the Black Power movement in America to Nelson Mandela to Gandhi to everywhere, like even in Palestine. So yeah, protests, people are like, oh, what's the point of a protest?
It's rare that anyone ever mentions a white guy because we've never been the people who...
Wait, just what happened in Ireland? I don't know. It's a boring history, white and white, whatever. But also, they don't make the movies.
Do you remember
then?
That famous time in history where the white guy had to overthrow all the black and brown?
Remember that? Remember? Anybody? But, yeah, so, like, you need to. Like, I go to protests. Even, like, my Fear of a Brown Planet, right? Like, that yeah. comedy show was for people that kind of already believed and accepted what we had to say. So...
That's interesting to me. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So you were in a comedy group.
Fear of a Brown Planet.
Yes.
And, you know, my political... My approach to politics is often like that. Just say the things that you believe and people that accept what you have to say will often accept what you have to say and then they'll retweet you and be angry together with you. And that's not such a bad thing. Like, if you're from an angry, pissed off community and you don't get to say things on TV or in newspapers, being together in a room and just yelling together is pretty cathartic.
Right.
You know? You're not convincing anybody outside that room, but together at least you feel like, yeah, I'm not alone. There are right. other people with us.
This is like going to Western Bulldog supporters.
Exactly
function.
Right. A lot of people sit together in the crowd, you know?
Right.
Because like, you just want to be amongst people who have the same yeah. colours and... Yeah! It's
right.
a football match. It's a battle.
Yeah.
And when you're, you know, so... when you, so that's what Fear of a Brown Planet, that kind of comedy was about, you know, just being able to vent together about things that normally piss you off and make you sad, but being happy about them. And you know what? I think that's good because just like protests, right? You're marching down the street, you're probably the only people listening, but people that see you might want to step into your world and also they can at least understand that there is that perspective out there.
Well, you know? Here's what I will say, like, and again, this has ramifications across our society and nicely weaves into some of the things we've been talking about, which is the idea of that we're afraid to listen to people
yep.
anymore, that sometimes uncomfortable ideas, you yeah. know, things that make us feel uncomfortable, particularly yeah. from a position of privilege.
Yeah.
Like, I was saying this in regard to yes or women. Like, you know, when that was happening on the internet. So basically it was just women telling their stories of like, you know, all these things that, right. you know, happen to okay. all women. Like, you know, like having to walk, that idea of having to walk to right. your car with sexual your car keys in your hand and like blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And basically what you found was there was, yeah. you know, millions of women all over the world sharing stories. And you were like, oh my God, like all these women have this like same experience of this thing that I've never had to think about once because yeah. I'm a white man.
Yeah.
Now, what you then find is white men trying to rebut some of the things. Right.
Right,
not all men, right?
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
my thing was like, I just listen, because even some of the things made me feel uncomfortable, and I was like, well, I would never think that, or I would never do that, or I would never like, you know, accept a world where I felt like that was happening around me, or whatever.
Mm.
But like, when I first went to see you guys yeah. do your show, I came with Andrew Denton.
God, imagine having Will Anderson. Imagine having Will Anderson, Andrew Denton in the crowd watching you.
But
when you're starting out.
But one of my,
you had the loudest laugh. You have a very distinct loud laugh. And Armour and I remember when we came off, we're like, man, we really enjoyed that show.
I did really enjoy the show. But the thing that I like enjoyed the most about it, and the thing that I kind of, as an audience member, enjoyed was that I was hearing some things that made me feel uncomfortable.
Mm.
And I was hearing some things that made me want to like respond. I was like, well, I'm not like that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was like, I want to know mm. what's pissing yeah. you off yeah. and your community off yeah. and what, because
That's interesting.
The men who want to argue against yes or women, right? If you want to like ignore yes or women, that's fine. But all those women, here's the biggest clue of all time. Mm. Women just told us a massive clue on what pisses them off. Wouldn't we want to listen to them and help them with those things? Wouldn't that help us get along better with women?
Yeah.
And in the same way, as if I hear the things that piss you off, what your concerns are, you know, what your life is like, then surely I have a better insight into, you know, like...
Well, totally.
I mean, I was reading Kurt Fearnley's book. Do you know who Kurt Fearnley is? He's a wheelchair athlete.
Right.
He is our greatest ever marathoner, Australian guy. Okay. He's won a bunch of gold medals at Olympics. He's won the like New York Marathon like five times.
Okay, rub it in that I don't know this guy and I really should.
No, no, but great guy.
Yeah, okay.
But I read his book and there were certain things that I, from reading his book that I was like, okay, he won't like, you know, don't. Offer to help him in this way or don't say this or whatever because they are
patronizing.
Yeah, and they're things that I want to know. Right. He's my friend. I'm inviting him to my house. I want to know how to best welcome my friend to my house.
Yep.
Of course I do. And he's just given me a clue. He's told me in his book. Women are telling me in Yes or Women how they want to be treated. You're telling me in that comedy show how you want to be treated. Now, what I do with that information is then
up to you.
Up to me.
Yeah. But you shouldn't be, as you were saying.
But why would you not listen?
Why would you immediately get defensive?
Right.
And let's take this back to what we were talking about before. Ideally, this is a stretch. Maybe comedy can solve the world, the world's problems. Like, imagine.
That's what I'd like to think.
Imagine.
And now this podcast is going to cost $25 an episode. Because once you start solving the world's problems, you have to start a business model and a religion. So welcome to Williantology.
That's awesome. I'm getting a cut. But imagine if there was a stand-up comedy show where members of ISIS got up on stage and ranted about things that really pissed them off. Like, at least we'd understand.
I'm happy for them to bomb on stage. That's what I want to say to ISIS. We're happy for you to bomb on stage. If you really want to bomb, we've got a few rooms we can recommend. We'll take you to a lunchtime uni gig. If you want to bomb, you've never bombed like a lunchtime uni gig. There'll be a guy down the front trying to do his homework.
On the grass.
It'll be mostly the international students so that you might be able to have some local stuff.
No, but that's kind of what it is. Like, I think, people who don't have the mic, that's what comedy does. And that's what these hashtags are. It gives them an opportunity to go, you don't listen to us normally? Here, we're going to just say what we need to say.
It's a voice for the voiceless, isn't
it?
Voice
for the voiceless.
I mean, this is the thing about yes or women. The reason that we haven't heard women saying these things is because that the media, the mainstream media, the mass media has been controlled by a certain type of person.
Don't talk about Jewish people like that.
And
edit point.
No, I'm going to leave that in. No, it's controlled by white men mostly, right? And the sort of women that they would let through or the sort of like, ethnic diversity they would let through would be the people they chose.
Acceptable.
And they would be able to have a certain voice.
Yeah.
They were, Ernie Dingo was the acceptable Aboriginal. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, he was
because he wasn't going to get on TV and suddenly do a rant about Mabo or something. You know what I mean? He wasn't going to be halfway through an episode of The Great Outdoors and then suddenly talk about Native Title. Make things uncomfortable.
Make all the white viewers guilty.
Yeah, so do an Invasion Day special of fucking Getaway.
Invasion Day specials don't rate,
No, it's just terrible. So, I mean, but these days, because of podcasts, because of, the internet, because of, social media, because of all those things, people have a voice.
Yeah. I agree. I totally agree. So this is why I need to have a Muslim comedy podcast.
Yeah.
Just rebutting Will Anderson.
Muslisten up. Muslism up.
Muslism up.
Muslism up.
But what we'll do in my podcast is we'll play your podcast and then pause it and go, Will says he doesn't believe in a God. All right. 1, 2, and 3. Let's go.
Right. I would love that. I would love a religious rebuttal of my podcast, an offshoot. I don't like to think it's an anti-will.
That would be the most flattering thing.
But you just go by, you use it as it'd be the equivalent of something you do being used as I think they use, I've never seen them use it, but I get messages from students and stuff that they use Gruen for in advertising and marketing courses at uni. And so I'd love to be where they take bits out and then people are discussing what we're
trying
to
analyze it.
And then I'd just be in the back, bullshit. I just thought that was a funny joke.
Then you have to do an anti my podcast, which would just get meta.
No. Because here's the thing. And it goes back to your initial premise, mm-hmm. your initial philosophy, which is I don't consider myself an expert. Mm-hmm. Like, the thing that I'm doing is asking questions. I just like to hear what people say so I can listen. Mm. And I will take bits from what you've said today, and I'll take bits from, you know, Kurt when he came and did the podcast, and I'll take bits from Kurt Fearnley, the guy, the wheelchair athlete. Kurt Fearnley. Have you forgotten him already?
No.
Just wanted
the audience to hear his name again so that they too could learn his name.
Right. They all know his name because they heard the podcast.
Well, they can't respond and say yes.
Right.
Yes, we do.
Well, we've just put that question on our citizenship test, so I'm sorry.
Are you serious?
Go back to where you can.
Leave this posh suburb.
This is actually I mean, the citizenship test for this suburb. We've brought in our own.
There were a couple of guys in high-vis vests at the top of your street.
Yeah, that's boards. Right. They're the border guards. we've got the same guys from Manus Island in our suburb.
There are some choppers above your house, but
actually, weirdly enough, this suburb is predominantly the cultural influence here is South African Jewish people.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So a massive influx of South African Jewish people left South Africa and came out and lived here.
During apartheid.
So during Christmas when we were playing South Africa cricket, it was quite a complex place to... I was like...
good. What about rugby as well?
Yep. I want to go back to this idea of... that I'm not an expert. Yep. And so I wouldn't... Like, the idea of rebutting, is to me something that I wouldn't waste my time doing, because all I'm ever saying to someone is, here's what my perspective on that is.
Yeah.
You know, I've always been a bit nervous of that idea that anyone who tells you they've got all the answers, they're the ones you've got to look out for. Mm-hmm. I'm happy for someone to go, here are some of them and here are some questions you might want to ask.
Well, what
but
happens,
anyone who tells you here are the rules and this is the one way, they're the ones I'm suspicious of.
What happens if there's a guy who is clearly ignorant?
Why does it have to be a guy?
Okay, he's clearly ignorant guy, and people that and he's gaining profile in the community.
Yes,
he's clearly problematic and he's causing problems.
Mm.
Would you rebut that guy?
Yeah,
if he had a following and people were like, he's charismatic.
I do.
So then,
Fred Nile's a good example.
Fred Nile.
Yeah.
Abbott, even?
Yeah, well, I'll rebut them on shit that I know better,
Yeah. Okay, Obama. Obama seems like a sacred cow to a lot of people.
Sure.
Because he's charismatic.
Yeah.
But...
Not in America, by the way. In America, he's not a sacred cow in any way.
Yeah. I'm not saying I have anything to say.
But I think worldwide, you're right. His international reputation is much better than his...
He got a Nobel Peace Prize.
Right. He's the opposite of the Indian cricket team. Like, he is terrible at home, but he's great on the road.
I thought you were going to say that, when no one likes him. Everybody likes him and they don't like the Indian cricket. He's totally charismatic. But someone like him with that kind of stuff, he could do all sorts of dumb stuff if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah, terrible. Sure, of course. Would, yeah. And people have in history. Yeah.
Well, the first thing he did was drone Pakistan. That was one of the first things he did.
I think you do have a responsibility to point out. See, this is the thing that
I'm not saying I hate Obama. I'm just saying,
I understand what you're saying. I understand exactly what you're saying. Mm. And this is why I've never been aligned to a political party.
Yeah.
And because my views are probably, most people, if they wanted to label them, would say they were progressive, although, not in every area.
Yeah.
I've never, I get asked to do things for, say, the Labour Party or the Greens or whatever, and I will never do them. For less than one, because I don't pay like the Liberals, and I live in a very nice suburb. I've got to pay the pool guy, so I'm not doing fucking Labour Party functions. I've never aligned myself to a political party because I have things that are important to me and I want to be able to... So, for example, when the last Labor government were in, two things that I'm very passionate about myself is firstly, our the way that we treat refugees and our responsibilities towards people who are seeking asylum. And the second one is gay marriage. I just believe in human rights that one person shouldn't have more than the other person, because of the way that they're born. Yeah. So there are two things I was very passionate about, and there were two things that the last government were terrible on, and I... always reserved the right and did, went after them hard. Yeah. Like, I had a question cut out of a pre-record on the project because I thought I was too mean to Julia Gillard.
Ooh.
Because Julia Gillard had been hanging out with Ellen, or it was the day Ellen was in this country and there was 35,000 people at her show, and Gillard was still banging on about how she wouldn't bring in gay marriage. And I was like, she's married to an Australian. How do you greet this international superstar and say, oh, by the way, your marriage to our Australian doesn't count when you're here.
God.
Like, it's outrageous. It's insane, old-fashioned. Yeah. And I think you need to be able to go after, what you believe or what you, think is important, no matter who's saying it, right? Mm. So I never think you should choose sides in that way. But, okay, I want to flip that question back on you.
Yeah.
Because in your community, that's something that people from the outside always say,
why don't the good Muslims tell the bad Muslims to stop doing the bad things?
Right.
Like, there's a journalist for the, I don't know if you call it a journalist, she writes for the Sydney Morning Herald or the Daily Telegraph, I'm not really sure.
Who is it?
Rita Panahi.
Oh, yeah, okay. So I think the Herald Sun in Melbourne, so the Telly in Sydney.
Daily Telegraph.
Yeah.
She wrote an opinion piece basically saying that moderate Muslims, which is a term that I find a little bit questionable, but anyway, Muslims, yeah.
Like, yeah.
Mainstream Muslims.
Yeah, mainstream Muslims, Muslims.
Muslims who just, hey, the taxi driver guy.
As long as we're going to say moderate Christians and moderate, but moderate has a sort of sense of, that they're the small ones.
Yeah,
like,
the small
ones.
Yeah. Or they follow just a bit of it. Yeah. It's just Muslim light.
Muslimish.
Fat-free Muslim.
Yeah. You're Muslimish, right? Yeah.
Okay. 99% Muslim-free.
Yeah.
But, so...
Are you halal certified? Because that's a dangerous area.
Well, she said basically extremists are going to keep doing extreme stuff until Muslims tell non-Muslims, tell bad Muslims to just take it easy, right? Yeah. Which is like ridiculous because firstly, we've been doing that forever. Like since 9/11, the Muslim community has been saying, excuse me, we condemn everything out bad. I was on the Islamic Council of Victoria for like 7 years, which is the peak Muslim body in Victoria. And every time someone did something overseas, we literally had a template. We would just fill in the place and where it was and just say we unreservedly condemn these actions. They do in no way represent the community here and have nothing to do with Islam and blah, blah, blah. Put it out. But if no one wants to listen, that's not our fault.
It's one of those things, isn't it, where it's like no one asked me for a fucking statement on Bill Cosby. No one's like, when is Will Anderson going to put out his statement condemning Bill Cosby publicly?
Exactly. But look,
as a member of the comedy community.
If the comedy community was absolutely silent,
right,
then that will make sense. They're like, well, why are they like obviously silent?
But they're not. He was called out by a comedian.
He was called out by a comedian. Exactly right. So, and the thing, so calling out Muslims publicly and saying we can, but even amongst our own community, there's a lot of that stuff that goes on all the time. Like, Muslims trying to pull up other Muslims who say terrible things publicly or who say bad things to their own community. Like, that happens all the time. Because, ultimately, communities want to strengthen themselves.
Well, also, if you believe in the fucking brand, then you don't want people fucking up your brand.
You don't want people basically committing identity fraud like that.
Right.
Like, it's kind of misappropriating and everybody's tarnished.
Like if in one of the Batman movies, in the Batman movie, it happened. Yeah. In the second movie, there was all the people going around dressed as Batman.
Wait, have I seen?
Trying to fight crime.
I've seen it.
The Dark Knight.
That's right.
And he was
hang
on.
Asses.
You're not helping.
Well, no, he doesn't kick their asses.
No.
They get their asses,
kicked. But then he's like, you don't do this anymore because you were terrible for my reputation. You're ruining it for
totally.
Me. The actual Batman.
The Muslim community needs to watch the second Batman.
Right. I mean, it's the same headwear. I think that really responds, what you guys need is a utility belt and people and some little ears and people will love you. it's just a rebranding exercise.
But he got banned, didn't he, Batman? Wasn't he an outlaw?
Yeah,
they banned his burqa.
Yeah, that's true. They did ban his burqa.
He had to go underground. He then had to wear like an actual Muslim burqa to do his vigilante work. Driving around in his bloody car. Anyway.
You talked about your sister wearing a scarf. Mm-hmm. What does she wear?
She wears a hijab, so that's probably the one that you see most commonly where her face is shown. So she started wearing probably during uni. And look, the thing is, I don't understand exactly why Muslim women wear the hijab. Like, because there are so many different reasons why Muslim women wear the hijab. Some women wear it because it's like a feminist statement saying, I'm a woman, don't objectify me, don't sexualize me, take me for what I am, for my character, what I have to say, then what I look like. Other women say, no, I'm an ambassador for my faith. Some people do it because...
Right, I'm a modern person working as a job as a lawyer. I'm not saying this is what your sister is, but I can imagine you're like, I'm just a normal person working at a law firm and I also
wear a hijab because I'm off on my head.
Yeah.
Some women, they say, look, I'm outwardly saying I'm a Muslim, and so, take me as an ambassador for my faith. Other women do wear it, unfortunately, because they feel that, Well, look, for all sorts of different reasons. For reasons that objectively you might find are inherently oppressive.
Yep.
But, you know, that's the thing. It's kind of hard to say the burqa is oppressive or it's not. Like, it's a broader conversation.
I still say one of my absolute highlights of my entire career was...
you've had many, because I just saw a photo of you shaking hands with the Dalai Lama.
So I'm going to put this right up there with shaking hands with the Dalai Lama. I had done a TV spot, and I used to have, this will be hard to describe on a podcast, but basically it was a routine about waving your hands in the air like you just don't care. And it has like a whole bit, and there's like a kind of a callback to it at the end where I wave my hands in the air. And like, anyway, so this bit had been on like the gala or whatever.
Hey.
And the next day I'm in King's Cross in Sydney, and I'm walking down the street, and a woman in full, like, now... I've heard that the burqa is not very common in Australia.
Are you talking about the one with the slit or the absolute mesh thing?
So what – I think it was slit. So what's
that's
that?
That's niqab, yeah.
Yeah, I reckon it was niqab,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I'd say that's what she was wearing.
Yeah.
But like a full – like, you know, really –
Yeah, conservative looking.
Yeah, conservative looking. And then I've just walked down the street and I've seen this like just put her arms in the air and wave them at me like across the street. And it was like one of those moments. Like I almost got a little bit fucking teary. It was
nice. That is super nice. Sometimes, like, to be honest, I do find – like I do get really, really surprised when I – because that's my own prejudice. Like, I'm conditioned, like, to find Muslim women who wear the face veil is, like, a little bit different. I do find it, like, you know, so when they come to comedy shows and I see them in the crowd, I always do, like, a triple take, and I pay particular attention to see how they laugh. But when you see their head shaking, like, you know, maybe they're laughing or just disappointed and shaking their head.
What about as someone who has had to counterbalance when you were on the Islamic Council. And being a comedian, like saying things publicly, was that a tough thing for you to have to balance?
Ultimately, I kind of did have to leave because, well, kind of my own choice, but because I felt that I didn't want to have the community, I didn't want to have to explain my comedy.
Right.
To the community.
Yeah, and you didn't need
to be like I'm a representative of the community.
Right. This is what we all think.
Officially, because I was officially on the board. So I just basically. But yeah, it's pretty. The thing is, most Muslims love it. Like, but because we come from a community that's been habitually humiliated for a long time, there are certain members, older people who perhaps don't understand Australian comedy, who see me on TV or on stage making jokes about Muslims and our lives and humanizing us. And everybody laughing, and they see non-Muslims laughing, and they think, "Oh, now there's a Muslim guy that's also making fun of us. Oh, here we go. Now everyone is making fun. This guy is just on their side, you know." So it's kind of like understanding that no, actually, a Muslim kind of just being funny is a good thing.
So you've put some thought into how, like, what your style of comedy will be in that situation, and what it is that you think you're doing, like in regard to the jokes you make.
In retrospect, I try. Like, oh, look what I was doing there was a very clever thing, but it's basically too late by then. It's hard. Like you can't overthink your comedy. Like as we were talking about outside. Like you're now at the point where you can just kind of get up on stage and just have a kind of a riff with the audience, like it's a conversation. And if you really think about the points that you want to make, and if you're treading a very particular line, like it's difficult to find the funnies as easily for me, I think so.
Okay, so when you were doing your show Legally Brown on SBS, which I love, by the way, I watched it when I was overseas, and I would like download each episode, and I really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
But when you're doing a show like that, like what do you go into it trying to achieve? Like what was your kind of aims and aspirations? What do you think you got right? What maybe didn't you, like if you had another chance at, would you do a different way?
I think my philosophy on comedy is just to joke about things that I would normally joke about with my friends anyway.
Right.
Right. And so often that's
if I joked about the things I joked about with my friends, I would get arrested.
We both joke about different things. Actually, I probably would get arrested. I'd get detained.
Oh, yeah. Not arrested. You wouldn't get arrested. You'd get removed from society and never heard of again. Why did his new show get cancelled? Well,
why did he change his show title to Legally White?
Right.
Why does his name look like Will Anderson?
Why is it called Illegally Brown now?
Why is it called I'm an Australian? But so that's kind of it. If I'm making my friends laugh, that, you know, then I think I'm doing the right thing. But also, I think that's kind of it. Like, if you muck around and you see people, like, I do like to make fun of white society. Like, that's kind of the sort of stuff that we grow up with. Especially when you're kind of socially, if you don't drink alcohol in Australia, it's a completely different world. Like, right. The way that you have fun, you have to be really creative.
This is the first sober podcast I've done.
Really got your power rate here.
Right. I was culturally respectful of you. I was like, I won't drink. Also, it is morning.
It is. But, it's friggin' early.
It's midday now.
Yeah, you've got to wait at least an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
But, so, you know, when we often hang out together sober on Saturday nights and some of that, you know, just inevitably we end up making fun of drunk people.
Right. As any sober person would.
It's kind of a way of saying, yeah, they're not cool. We're cool for not drinking and having our cordial. Like, so that's sort of like culture of making fun of.
I like the idea that you're drinking cordial. Are you actually drinking cordial?
Or strawberry nest. Right. Either or, you know, depending on your calcium intake for the day.
That is, but again, like, and this is why I think that all this sort of comedy is so fantastic, is like, particularly as a white person, yeah, like, you understand that, like, it's great to be made fun of. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
well, it doesn't hurt. That's
well, what because because people are kicking up.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't mean that in a, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah, they're kicking up to power and authority or unearned authority or just difference,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it helps people learn. Anyway,
well, I sometimes I wonder whether, you know, I leave a show and I'm like, oh, did I make too much fun of white people? But then I think, nah, they're white people.
They right. They'll be fine.
I know. It was an hour of their lives.
Yeah. They can go back to the rest of their lives.
They can turn on the TV, see themselves, pat themselves on the back again, open up a magazine, read the newspaper, be in the world.
It might be a shock to them going back so quickly, though. It might be like the bends. You come out of one of your shows and then everything's just way too white all of a sudden.
Don't float people.
You need to get some, like, you know, so it's like lighter browner people, like maybe a person with a tan so people can ease back into white society.
Their privilege.
Yeah.
That should be the title of what he's like. Ease back into my privilege.
Oh, I've got privilege shock.
Oh, shit.
Oh, it's just
snap back into it so quickly.
What about kids?
Kids.
Are you a person who thinks that you will have kids? Is that something that you would like to have kids?
I love kids.
Yeah.
I probably would like to have kids, I think. But I don't know. Yeah, again, how do you bring your kids up if you're religious?
Right.
And do you sort of drill shit into their heads? Yes, you do. No.
Yeah. It's the only way to get them to come back. They'll probably drift around in their teens, but if we drill enough of this shit in, they will come back and they will make more of us. Come on.
How else are we going to take over this place? Right. But I don't know. I think I have no answer to that question. I don't know if I feel that my upbringing was the way that I'd like to bring up my kids, you know. Because, you know, my parents, they just told us this is what God is, this is what, you know, there's kind of no reasoning behind that until a lot later on in life. And I don't really think that's a good thing to do. Like, kids need to understand ideas before they understand, like, the idea of love.
Right.
The idea of being nice to neighbors, being nice to, you know, being generous, seeing people less advantaged than you, being, you know, feeling grateful, I think is more important. And that may may lead them to God, and I may pull them by their hands.
Right.
or they might not. But I think that's more important in many ways. And for me, because if I genuinely believe in God, if my genuine belief, and this is me asking myself that question, then I think that everybody would be able to find God if they really searched, right? And that everybody has their own kind of belief system. And I think that's what ultimately would happen to my child if I genuinely thought that's what the world is, it's created by God. And so why should I need to drag my child there if I instill good values in them that they may find that themselves? And if they don't, then it's their own sort of journey and their own path. But so long as, you know, they are good people, it doesn't really matter. Does the rest really matter?
That is a very nice note to end on, I think.
Me having kids.
That was a nice message. Okay. That was a very nice little wrap-up. I thought that was...
I thought so too.
I was going to ask you about education. Now that you've ruined this nice moment, I'm going to go back and ask you about education
okay,
now. You said that, you know, you were around a bunch of teachers
yep.
the other night. you're obviously a person who thinks that you can inform people through your work, at least about, you know, like, you know, what your worldview is like and what your life experience is like.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on teaching? Yeah. How important do you think teachers are? Did you have a one particular teacher who inspired you in some way? What do you think is wrong with education? How could we make it better for people so people can, you know, be better educated?
Oh, I had a really good chemistry teacher. Mr. Kogo, one of my favorite teachers. Yeah,
made meth, right?
He helped me make a lot of money.
That's why I'm rich now, and I don't need to drink because I have heaps of meth.
I've got heaps of meth. Yeah, that's the other thing I didn't tell you. I drink. I do meth. But he was really good. Like it wasn't just the way he taught me, but it was kind of the way he taught other students who just weren't confident. Like, he kind of didn't expect them to get it, but he just sort of was there and let them know, and let me know as well, that, you know, like, he's just, you can trust him. Almost like a friendly relationship. And outside of school, he kept in touch with us. I don't know if that becomes creepy, but, like, he was like a
good guy. I think it's sad that we live in a world where people think that becomes creepy.
Yeah.
There should be nothing better than a teacher, because and I'm sure lots of teachers do this.
Yeah.
Like, you help to create somebody. Mm. Of course you'd want to keep in touch and see how they're going. And, like, you know, you helped form this person and shape this person.
Yeah, well, I think it's like, if you trust a teacher, like, you want to learn it. Like, you want to, it's like, this is wanky, but there was this one guy who came, I used to work in an office, and this CEO of a company came to Australia, and he spoke about how he hires and fires. And he basically said he hires people based on their personality traits more so than on their qualifications or their, like, professional, whatever. Because he says, if you can create a workplace where there is more of a possibility that people become best friends, then you will want to do work for each other because you want to help your friend out, not because you want to help the company out.
So I always think about that a lot when it comes to shows. Like, I always talk about we in regard to the show. Like, if people will pull me up on it. I was like, yeah, we had a great show the other night. And they'll be like, who's we? And I say, well, it's not just me. It's the person who books the venue, and it's my tour manager, and it's the publicist, and it's the people from my management company. And, like, most of the things that happen, I don't know how they happen. Like, I've got no idea, like, how these things happen. I just rock up and tell my jokes. Yeah. You asked me, I shouldn't reveal this. I'm going to have to cut two things out. But no, I might leave this one in. I'll cut yours out and I'll leave this one in. Which is that you asked me who shot my DVD the other night. And I was like,
you know, sure.
Right? Because that's not my job to know that. My job was to, like, do a good job on stage.
Yeah.
And but also, I want all those people to feel like they're part of it.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
I probably should know who he was to make him feel like he was part of it. But I value I trust that person's an expert and can do their job. You know,
and like you feel like you work with people that you can just trust and leave it to, and that they've got your best interest at heart.
Right.
And in education, as I said, my partner, she's studying primary teaching after she was a lawyer for many years, and she realized, I can't do the law because I want to connect with people. So she's now going back and learning primary teaching.
Which, by the way, is what we need more of in teaching. Not necessarily all lawyers, but we need to value it as something that
is a worthy profession.
Right.
And she properly inspires me to actually be a better person. So I'm like, wow, she actually cares about her job to the point that she thinks
about it. What's your qualification?
We studied law together, actually.
Right.
So we studied
law. So basically, law's lost two lawyers for a fucking clown and a teacher.
Which is probably a good thing for the legal profession and also for
it's a win-win. It's a win-win.
Everyone's happy. But if you can make your students feel like they're your friends and that they can just trust you, then I think they will want to learn. Like, or
because I think the thing that we sometimes teachers have a hard time getting across, and I think it's because of our immature brains, but also I think it's because of the way our system's set up, is this idea that saying, like, what a teacher is, what you're trying to really say is, like, my job is to help you learn this thing.
Yeah.
Like, however it is that you learn it.
Mm.
I'm not here to get you in trouble that you don't know it.
Yeah.
My job is literally to help you learn it.
Mm.
Right. And there's that, just that weird little shift. If you meet a teacher who, like, is like, oh no, it's my job to just guide you so that you know this by yourself.
Yeah.
It's an amazing
thing. Oh, it's totally amazing. And I think, like, when I was really young in primary school, I used to think, wow, teachers are the most, they must be the smartest people on the planet because they're teaching us things about the world. So they must know that better than anybody.
Imagine if they were the smartest people on the planet.
Well,
imagine, like, I would just love to see that if you know,
That is actually a pretty profound thought.
Right. Like,
if we had...
That would be an amazing experiment. Mm. What would our society look like if the most important people...
For one generation, at least.
For one generation, we got the most qualified, you know, people, and we made them the teachers. Well, not made them. You know, like, what? You know, we'd need them to...
That's an experiment worth investing in. And imagine if we just go, look, let's raise $1 billion.
Right.
And then
just... Let's do a Kickstarter.
With your podcast listeners, we can do this.
You know, Australia really went ahead after the great Anderson reforms of the early 2015.
The Anderson reforms.
Right. Sorry, mate, you didn't get on the... People didn't think it tested well with Hussein
with
in the title.
The 25-year-old.
People didn't trust it, mate. Hussein has a bad brand name.
People aren't going to put money to that. Where's the money really go?
Yeah, that's right. It's going to terrorism, like halal certification. It's all funding terrorism.
But that's an awesome idea. You know what? Let's put that to government. They should get the best teachers.
All right. That was a good note to finish on as well.
Thank you.
Hey, mate, where can people find you? Like, where can they tweet you or Facebook you or look up your dates on your internet
on Twitter,
or something?
At Nazim_Hussein. On Facebook, Nazim Hussein. Instagram, Nazim Hussein. And I've got a website, nazimhussein.com.au.
We didn't really get to talk about work as much as I would have liked, but we had a lot of other... So I would love, next time you've got a big project on, come back.
I'll be here.
And I'd love to talk to you about, A, what the process of that is, but then through that we can talk about, like, you know, other things you've worked on and whatever. So I like these conversations when, people should definitely check out your work. And
comedy festivals.
Right.
Comedy festivals coming up. Get your tickets.
What's the show called?
It's called Legally Brown. You know what? That was a marketing strategy. Because I think people are like, hey, you're that on the street when I see them. They're like, hey, you're that guy. From
Legally
that show,
Brown.
Legally Brown. Mm. Well, no one knows my name, so.
No, that's good.
Post it next
Makes sense to me.
Get more tickets.
Right. And my show, Free Will, is on sale. Free Will.
Okay. People probably do this all the time. I had... a show title.
Oh, no, I love them because I write them down and then I got one for next year.
How about this one? Are you for Will?
Are you for Will? Yeah,
hey!
That's good. Yeah, I remember that. I'm going to put that on the... I'll put that on the list. I can do it like the young people too. Are you for
Will?
Will.
Oh, that's sick.
See, people can like... There's your hashtag. Hashtag are you for... The number four, Will. Are you for Will?
Will?
Nice, that's good. Sick. Very modern.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mate, thanks very much for being part of the podcast. Oh, we're shaking hands. I like that. That's good. We should do that more often.
knows I could be without you.
Heaven knows I won't live without you. We're in two, put us back together. I gotta know, will you stay forever?